Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity episode 292. I'm your host, John Reardon. Neil had something come up kind of last moment and so is not here today, but I am joined for this special off-schedule episode by two guests. One, the semi-regular co-host almost, Matt Zawodniak.
I've been on a couple of these.
A couple. Weirdly, all with a similar theme. And
most of them, not all.
Most of them.
There was no more heroes.
And yeah, oh, yeah. And joining us from the before time is Jared Rosenberg.
Hello, how are you guys?
I am great. I am excited to talk to you guys because you guys did something that I would very much like to do, which is play Metroid Dread. There was an event in New York. When was it? Was it last week or the week before?
It was last week.
Okay. Yeah, and to check out Metroid Dread along with the Switch OLED model. So we're gonna talk about this event, get you guys' impressions, talk some Metroid, and then we may touch on the Nintendo Direct that happened on this past Thursday at the end here, because our predictions weren't entirely accurate, though they weren't terrible. So let's start. Give me just kind of a rundown of basically what this event was, kind of how it played out. Not everybody listening has been to Nintendo press events, so just take us there.
Oh, if you haven't been, you should go sometime. They're pretty cool. You know, just show up one day. They'll definitely let you in.
They'll let you in.
I have to say this one was a little different than past events. It was a room. And the point was to play the Switch OLED, like you said, and to play Metroid Dread. So, there, you know, sometimes they have a bunch of games to play, but here it was just a very specific what they had available. Matt, we were not there at the same time, but we both got to try it.
Yeah, and on that note, I should probably, it's probably professional for me to clarify that.
Yes.
I was actually there doing freelance work for Good Vibes Gaming, who by the time that you're listening to this now, they probably have my preview for them up. So you should head over to the Good Vibes Gaming YouTube, and there should be a preview for Metroid Dread. And I think there will also be one for the Switch OLED model there. So make sure you go check them out.
And for Nintendo World Report, there'll be a article right now, as you're listening to this, there's an article on NintendoWorldReport.com and also on our YouTube channel.
I briefly got confused because I forgot how time works. And I was like, Jared, there's not an article right now.
But by the time you're listening.
Yes. Yes.
Is he time travel and all that?
Yes.
I had to teach Joe about this, actually, because we recorded Smashterpieces on Wednesday and he wanted to start talking about the new Smash Brothers character as though it were a guaranteed thing. So...
Well, we know who it is.
Do we?
Yeah, of course we do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks to our insider knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah.
This was even worse last week when me and Neil were trying to do direct predictions. We record normally on Wednesdays, and the episode came out on a Friday. So we were doing direct predictions before the direct that was going to come out the day before the episode came out. There was lots of weird time travel. But yes, so we won't start with Metroid because otherwise everyone here listening would just tune out at the end when we talk about the OLED. So let's talk about the Switch OLED model. Let's give it some time in the sun. What were you guys' impressions of it? Did it feel like much of a difference from the base Switch model?
When I first saw the Switch, I was like, oh, yeah, it looks exactly like a regular Switch. Like, I didn't even, other than the fact that it had white Joy-Cons, this is with the screen off. I, you know, just picking it up, I would have been like, okay, this is a regular Switch. I mean, obviously, if you look closely at it, it was not a regular Switch, but.
Sure.
That was first impression, like, okay, it's a Switch.
I kind of felt that way too. The way that I feel about it is it's funny that, like, oh, we all said that the name was very silly, like, oh, it's just the Nintendo Switch OLED model. But now I'm like, that's probably for the best, a very honest name for exactly what it is. It is a Switch with an OLED screen, and that is about it.
And a much better kickstand. The kickstand's so much better than the original.
It is. That is true. But that's also like, I bought a kickstand for $20 like 3 years ago. So it doesn't feel like a very big upgrade.
Did you guys ever actually try using the original Switch kickstand on an airplane as was depicted in the original ads?
I did.
Yes. That puppy falls over real fast. It was.
You were able to set it up in a way where you could actually see the screen.
Oh no, you set you well, you set it on the tray table that's, you know, a centimeter away from your chest in the tiny airplane seats, and you have like your Joy-Cons like up beside your ears so that, you know, they can actually connect to the Switch, and then it falls over.
The only reason that I have bothered to put the kickstand back on after it fell out is so that there is a cover for the SD card. Otherwise, it's just like, what's the point? I've never used it.
I used it when they had, before Splatoon 2 came out, I went to a Starbucks and was playing like the, what do they call those? It was like the test demo. Anyway, I played Splatoon 2 in a Starbucks once. I think that's the only time I did.
You're a bona fide hipster.
Yeah.
Obviously, I know like the kickstand is kind of the main selling point of this thing, but how was the screen? Did that feel different once it was turned on?
So the thing of it is, if you've ever seen an OLED screen in your life, you already know how good the screen is. It's not a very sexy upgrade, so to speak, because it's really not doing anything new or unique. It really is. It's an OLED screen. You already know what an OLED screen is, so you kind of already know what it's going to look like. A lot of cell phones nowadays have OLED screens, so just pull up some YouTube footage on one of those and you'll see how games look on it.
I was really impressed. I thought it looked nice. I have an OLED TV. I've played Switch on an OLED, but not portably, and I thought it looked damn nice in my hands, and Metroid, the only game we got to try on it was Metroid Dread, and it looked beautiful in my hands. I was impressed, and I'm someone who, when the OLED was first announced and we found out there wasn't any hardware upgrade, I at first was like, okay, I'm never buying this. I, after having it in my hands, actually sort of want to get one now. So I was impressed.
I feel like you guys have very, because Matt, did you cancel your pre-order?
I thought I did. I checked and I saw that it's still there. And I'm like, am I going to be able to like sell this on eBay for more
it
than I paid
like
for it?
It sounds like you can sell it to Jared.
Yeah, I might be able to. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
if you can't get a pre-order, then you can have mine.
It almost seems like they ought to have had like a regular Switch that like a beat up launch day Switch there sitting next to it, just so you could get, because that's like the thing is, you're looking at a game you've never seen before on this thing, so there isn't much of a point of comparison.
So I legitimately don't know if like I'm allowed to say this, but like when I was there, like I was using my personal Switch to like set up the shot for my camera, and like the Nintendo rep there, like he kind of like came over and clarified, like, oh, by the way, like you're not allowed to show the original Switch and the OLED Switch running at the same time next to each other.
Interesting.
So I don't know.
Maybe they don't feel confident about it. Granted, I mean, that could also be depending on your camera.
That's true. That is
like
true.
You may not be able to if you can't accurately represent it, then it's almost like they never liked direct feed of 3DS games.
Yeah,
because it doesn't show accurately what this is.
Yeah,
it could be something like that.
And overall, I should say, like, I agree that like OLED display is the best display technology that exists right now. The OLED Switch is objectively the better Switch. It's just like, it's the one to buy if you are already going to buy a Switch one way or another. So
sure.
If you don't currently have a Switch, or if you need to replace your current one because it's all beat up, then you buy an OLED. If you already have a Switch and you weren't already planning to buy a new one, I don't think there's a reason to run out and get this one.
The one other thing to mention, which I'm sure you guys already know, or listeners, I'm sure you already know, but the screen is, even though the height, I think, is exactly the same on the OLED Switch, the screen itself is slightly larger. The bezels are smaller. And yeah, you do notice that.
I think it's like the physical build is the same size, but because the bezels are smaller, they're able to make the screen bigger.
Yeah. And that is, you notice it. It's nice that the screen's a little larger. At least for me on the original Switch, you know, I love the original Switch, but the bezels were noticeable. And I feel at least on this model, it's a noticeable improvement and it's nice. And, you know, for a good looking game, and Metroid Dread is a very nice looking game, it helps to have the OLED screen and the larger screen. So, but I also hear how it's not going to be a necessary upgrade for everyone.
Sure. Yeah. But I get what you're saying about just kind of making it a bit, I don't know, almost more sleek. I always felt that way when, like, because I never picked up a Switch Lite, but anytime I played one out and about, I did always notice it felt a bit more sleek because there's a bit less plastic around the screen. It goes all the way out to the end. So I can see the OLED kind of having a similar effect, but, you know, bigger.
Yeah, it's objectively an upgrade. I just think it's a marginal one.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that's kind of what we expected was.
In the case of like the screen size, it's like literally marginal. Yes. Yeah, they get rid of the margins of the screen.
So let's talk about the real meat and potatoes of this thing.
The main event.
Yes, Metroid Dread itself, which we are like, what, 2 weeks out from that game soon coming out?
Roughly, yeah.
Yeah.
1.5 Least,
yeah, by the time this comes out, yeah. What did you guys play? What was this demo like?
The demo is what I believe to be the final game, or at least I'm sure there'll be like polish or bug fixes or whatever from the one that we played. But as far as I could tell, it looked like this was Metroid Dread, not some truncated demo. And we started it right at the beginning of the game. So, right with the opening cutscene into the tutorials where, like, you know, it tells you how to use your missiles, and then, you know, in any other Metroid game, then you'd get your first ability, the Morph Ball, which we didn't in the entire demo.
I was really confused. Not really confused. I may be skipping ahead, but you bring up the Morph Ball. You might, if you've watched the Treehouse Live for Metroid Dread, or, you know, read the report volumes, or been reading Nintendo World Report and watching our videos, I'm sure you already know one of the big new moves that you get right away is the slide move. Mm-hmm. But because of the slide move, I sometimes was confused. I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be somewhere where I need the Morph Ball. And then of course, like a minute later, I'm like, oh yeah, I can just slide under that.
So I kind of had the opposite experience where you, in every other game, you get the Morph Ball so early that I don't know how to play a Metroid game understanding that I don't have the Morph Ball. Right. So I was able to just slide under anything without effort, but then like I'd be hanging from a ledge that, like, in any other game, like, you'd climb up into this ledge and then go into Morph Ball, and I was like, why isn't it letting me go up this ledge? And it's like, oh, Samus can't crawl.
Legendarily known fact.
Yeah,
that's strange, because this, I mean, it's like, how long were you guys playing this set? Like, how much time did you spend playing?
An hour and a half was the limit that we had, and
that's a long time for no Morph Ball.
Yeah, and it feels intentional. Like, it definitely, because there were spots that you had to use the Morph Ball everywhere, like that climb up the ledge thing that I mentioned. Like, it wasn't exactly a rare thing. Like, I could feel that this area was built for the Morph Ball and I was going to have to come back later. And Metroid games always kind of play around with, like, the order you get items in, because it's always a little different each time. And this is interesting to me because it's the first time that they've ever played with when you get the Morph Ball.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty much always, I mean, iconically in the first Metroid, you you show up, you take a left, you get the morph ball. It's mm-hmm. in the first room. And it, even in the other ones where it's gotten a little bit farther out, it's never been. I mean, an hour and a half into the game, by average Metroid time, you're a quarter of the way through the entire game at that point.
Sometimes you're done.
Right. Granted, it remains to be seen, you know, how long Dread is. But yeah, that's crazy.
Which, like, just for like a general feel for it, like looking at the map and the size of the map, it felt like that hour and a half that I played was roughly 10 to 15% of the game. But I also don't know how much backtracking you're going to do, because like if you were to show
clearly
me a map,
a bit.
If you were to show me a map of Super Metroid, and then I'd be like, oh man, I covered like all of Brinstar and Norfair all at this once. This game must be almost over. And then it's like, no, you're about a third of the way through.
Yeah, you never know. Well, yeah, if you're having to morph, but if you're seeing tons of areas right away that you can't get to, that's an interesting sign. Mm-hmm. Now, did it feel? I mean, we've been so, you know, Matt, you and I obviously we've been playing Metroid Fusion. I think we've both finished it our freshest playthrough.
I actually haven't started Fusion yet because I've dedicated myself to playing it on stream. But like, I mean, I've played Fusion before. I know sure. what it's like.
Jared, what is your history with the how into Metroid are you?
I enjoy Metroid. I would not say I'm a hardcore Metroid fan. I have not played Metroid Prime 3, believe it or not, which I want to play it someday, but I just never got around to it.
It's a time commitment.
I like the Metroid games. You know, Metroid Zero Mission's awesome. Fusion's awesome. I've played every 2D Metroid, so
okay.
I like Metroid. This is, I feel like a good thing to bring up is, what Metroid game is Metroid Dread most like?
That is what I was going to ask. So yeah, we're on the same page.
Cool. It's Metroid Samus Returns. And yeah.
So I think that question changes depending on whether you're talking about what does the engine and controls feel like, and what does the structure of the adventure feel like? Because sure. I think those are two very different questions and they have two different answers.
I'm guessing that the controls of how Samus feels, I'm assuming that's the part that feels most like Samus Returns.
100%.
Yeah.
Okay.
And for the overall structure, I would say it's somewhere between Fusion and sort of Samus Returns, sort of Zero Mission, because it felt linear and structured. There were points where I had to go into a communications room and talk to the Atom AI, just like in Fusion, but he was never telling me where to go. He was always giving me general instructions and then saying, all right, go figure it out.
Okay.
So it felt kind of like a first playthrough of Zero Mission to me,
sure.
where you have a very structured linear path. And obviously, since I only played an hour and a half, I don't know if it can open up on future playthroughs like Zero Mission and Super Metroid do. But I at least feel like it could, because there's a phrase that I used in my preview for GVG that is like sequence band-aids. It's like whenever like the game goes way out of its way to make sure you can't sequence break. And like those like air vents and the yellow goo in Samus Returns are a big example of that. I didn't get any of that in Dread. Like there was not a single spot that I would call a sequence band-aid. So,
okay. So like, yeah, spots where it like the game is actively fighting you as opposed to you just not having the ability to go somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
I never encountered that. And like I said, there's no way to know from this early if there's like actually going to be open-ended sequence breaking, but it feels like there could be. And also, just like Fusion, it's so good at what it's trying to do that I kind of don't mind if there isn't.
Yeah. Yeah, that is something I noticed with this most recent playthrough of Fusion is, yeah, I'm aware this is more linear. I do not care because I am so invested in what's happening and what I'm doing.
Yeah, I knew I would like the whole horror theme that they're going for. I didn't know I would like it quite as much as I did.
Does it feel more like, does the horror element feel more more strong this time around?
I would say just from the way that the story is presented, like immediately it does.
Okay.
Because I don't think we like actually talked about how the game opens.
I mean, at this point in the episode, hopefully you figured this out, but like if you're worried about spoilers from the first hour and a half of Dread, then like maybe this ain't the episode for you. Mm-hmm. But there you go.
To be fair, if you're the kind of person who's been reading the volume reports and like has seen all the trailers so far, I feel like you've seen most of the stuff that's in the first hour and a half anyway, or maybe not every little detail, but you've seen some of it, like the opening cutscene with the Chozo warrior, or like whoever is in the Chozo suit. They show part of that in one of the more recent trailers. So you've already seen like, I don't know, 20-30% of that cutscene.
I would say that like people have seen more of that than they realize, because when you watch the trailer, it feels like, okay, there's some context here that was taken out for the trailer. Mm-hmm. And then you play the game and it's like, there actually really wasn't, because you show up and you see this Chozo and he kicks your ass. And then you black out, and then you just wake up and your abilities are just gone. And like you talk to Adam and he's like, I have no idea what just happened. Your only objective is to get to your ship and leave.
That's a good setup. Yeah. It feels very un-Metro. Well, it almost feels like a lot of the Metroid games have, you know, the classic Metroid escape sequence. It's almost like they just took an escape sequence and made that the entire game. In terms of the concept. I kind of like that.
I'm sure that like more story stuff will happen later and it'll change up the objective, but like for at least the entire time I was playing, like the only goal was to get out with my life.
Yeah.
I'm curious, cuz again, they sort of said this in the Treehouse Live during E3, but you want to get back to Samus's ship. Like that's the goal. So I'm curious if like when you finally get to Samus's ship, like will the game sort of be like, okay, you can save now and then the game ends? Like, is that going to be how it all ends?
Oh, sure. Or is that the end of the tutorial?
Right.
It shows the title screen.
Yeah, I mean, one way or another, I'm sure there's like a final boss. Like, Ridley's at your ship again. But yeah, I don't like. That's a good question, because I don't know either. Like, is getting to your ship just the first part of the game, or is that going to be the ultimate goal?
Right.
Most of the game doesn't even take place on ZDR. That's just the introductory segment.
We haven't even
seen the actual planet the game takes. That's why they're willing to say so much about it, is we haven't even seen where the game actually takes place.
Yeah.
If that's true, this would be like a 20 to 30 hour game.
I mean, it is. I mean, it's. They did. So we talked about this a little bit when we were talking about Metroid 2 and Samus Returns and AM2R. But like, Samus Returns did make Metroid 2 longer, right? Like, it wasn't just that Metroid 2 was always a long game.
Yeah, but even then, still, it's only like 10 hours.
Yeah, but that's twice the length of the average Metroid game at a leisurely pace.
Yeah, and I'm saying, like, if like the just from the size of the ZDR map, if like if you actually left this planet and spent the majority of the game elsewhere, then like this would be triple the size of Samus Returns.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I guess what I'm getting at is I do would you guys agree that it seems like this is probably going to be longer than a 4 to 5 hour game? Based on what you've seen?
Yeah, my guess is that it's probably around the length of Samus Returns.
Okay, so yeah, like 12 hours or so, at a guess.
Maybe for you.
Well, yeah, I'm assuming there's no sequence breaking in this, Matt.
It wasn't a perfectly structured Samus Returns either.
People have speedrun it. I've seen it.
Not very many if you've looked at speedrun.com.
I, to be fair, we've seen so little of the games. I think, like we said, we don't know, will the game end when you get to Samus's ship, or does the game keep going? Like, we don't know.
And yeah,
they could have packed a lot of stuff into this game. They've had 3 years to make it. So
Yeah, we finished the demo without the morph ball, so
he's been thinking about it and planning it out for the past 15 years. So it's expansive.
Yeah.
And of course, we do have to have the obligate, you know, you'll get back to your ship, somehow lose your power suit and have to play through the game again as Zero Suit Samus, taking no damage from anything because you'll be extremely weak.
You say obligatory. That's happened once.
I feel like they'll do it again. It happened once in the most I guess it was a remake. I was going to say in the most recent original Metroid, but that was also a remake. Man, it's been a long time since there's been an original 2D Metroid.
It really has.
19 years.
Like
Jesus.
The most recent original 2D Metroid was my first ever Metroid when I was in elementary school.
It was my first, my first 2D Metroid was Fusion. I was a child. So that's Dread. Did you guys have any kind of closing thoughts or things you wanted to add on to your
Didn't even talk about the Emmys.
Oh, let's talk about the Emmys.
I thought the Emmys were really cool. Going back to how we were talking about the horror element, the Emmys are scary.
I don't know what footage they're going to use in the Good Vibes Gaming preview, but like if they use any footage of like an Emmy chasing me, like you're going to see my hands like freaking out because I was like actually really stressed.
It's obviously not quite the same thing as the SAX in Fusion, but I always got like with that, it felt like you had very little room for error. Is that the same case here where like if you mess up, you are just screwed?
It's definitely more forgiving than the SAX because the SAX was a scripted event that had one way you were supposed to do it.
Yes.
Whereas the Emmys are not scripted whatsoever. Like, I don't know if you play like Resident Evil 3, like with like Nemesis and everything. It's exactly that, where it's like it is a persistent threat that is on the map at all times.
Are there parts of the map where they aren't, or do they roam like the whole map?
There are parts of the map that they aren't in, but the parts of the map that they are in are pretty big. And whenever you're in an Emmy area, it's designed in such a way that you have multiple paths to get away from them. But on the flip side of that, that means they have multiple paths to find you.
Sure. Yeah.
So it really is kind of like a cat and mouse thing where you need to be extremely careful when they don't know where you are. And when they do know where you are, you just run because.
Yeah.
If it catches you, like you can survive with a melee counter, but I think it's like a one frame window. Like, I don't know if it's literally one frame, but I got caught by the Emmys like at least 12 times during my demo, and I pulled off the melee counter to escape once.
Jeez.
It's genuinely very scary and it's really fun.
Like, yeah.
They committed to the theme of like a horror monster is chasing you and they did an incredible job because there are stages to where to like its detection of you, which are color coded. There is one where it's heard you and knows generally where you are. And then there's one where it sees you and it's chasing you.
Even the SAX, like despite being scripted, occasionally had some good jump scares. So I'm excited to see what they can do with something that is legitimately always a threat. Because with the SAX, once you knew where it was, then it was like,
And Jared, I don't know what your experience with the Emmys was, but...
One thing I wanted to mention was it's also really scary, like, once you've gotten a Omega Cannon, or like, once your cannon has like temporarily switched and become an Omega Cannon, and you have a chance to actually kill the Emmy, it's really just scary as the Emmy is approaching you and it's like, okay, I have one shot to kill this thing, you know, shoot it in the head, blow up its head. But it's like, if I miss, I'm going to die. Like it's like,
and it's like a two-step process too. You have a rapid fire that you need to use to like superheat its metal plating. And then you have to do the really long charge for the big beam.
Right. And then the charge can actually, you can mess up the charge. So you're charging it with the R button. But if you charge too long, the charge actually will like turn off and you have to start it again.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that can happen because I screwed up and that happened. I will say one thing. I was a little pissed because there's this part where you have the Omega Cannon and then I'm like going to look to find the Emmy. And like, I was walking into the room or like heading towards where the Emmy was. And like, I enter a new room and then the Emmy was like right in front of me and killed me immediately. And I had zero time to react. And I was a little annoyed by that.
I've noticed that like their, not their vision cone, but like their audio range, what they can hear, there is like a faint circle. And if there's one like right on the other side of the door, you'll be able to see that range.
Oh, gotcha. Interesting.
Okay. I didn't realize that. I hope that I would have seen that.
Assuming you have, you know, the high color contrast of the Switch OLED model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Sure, sure.
Sorry if you're playing on a base model.
It's
loser.
Like the sticker that's like better on new 3DS. That's better on OLED Switch.
Yeah, it's those levels in Super Mario 3D Land where, like, if you're playing this on a 2DS, I'm sorry. Good luck finding the hidden blocks. I do want to ask about, this is something that's come up a few times. Can you guys clarify the control setup?
It's Samus Returns.
Okay. Is it the case that is your aim on the right stick? Like, is it a separate thing?
No. It is identical to Samus Returns.
Okay.
It's not completely identical. You can aim while you're moving now. That wasn't in Samus Returns.
Yes, that well it sort of was, but it wasn't nearly as good. Mm-hmm. In Samus Returns, you can aim in eight directions while not eight directions really. It's pretty much just diagonal up and forward, but it's like it's the cardinal directions and Dread while you're moving, if you like tilt the control stick up, then it'll let you do sort of the free aim while you're moving, but it's not like you have full free aim while you're running around. You can use the right stick. It's literally just it plays like Samus Returns, but it's slightly better.
Okay, interesting.
There's like there's nothing that I would say is like actually changed, just tuned up.
Sure.
For the aiming, the one other move, which Matt, I was curious of your opinion of it, but the melee dash. Now,
right.
You already had the melee counter in Samus Returns, but the melee dash, basically, if you don't remember the melee counter, you can hit the X button. If there's like a flying creature coming at you, you usually will have, there'll be some kind of visual prompt to let you know, like, okay, now is a good time to hit the X button to counter it. But with the melee dash, now you finally can like, okay, you don't have to wait for that moment, that visual cue. You can sort of, you know, slam right into an enemy whenever you want to knock it out. Or I don't know if that's a good description, but what did you think of it, Matt?
I still kind of felt like its utility was best used as a counter, but I did think that it felt better than in Samus Returns, because in Samus Returns, like you come to a full stop when you're using it. And mm-hmm. so like you need to just literally be standing there waiting for an enemy. And in Dread, you can be like running up to an enemy and then you'll see the flash for the counter and then you can hit the button while you're there. And
oh, sure.
I think that worked out a lot better. And I also felt like the necessity of the melee counter was tuned down a lot, because in Samus Returns, every enemy felt like it had a little too much health because you were supposed to use the melee counter on it. And if you didn't do that, then it would take way too long. And I didn't feel like that in Dread. And that's not to say that I didn't use the melee counter at all. It's just that, like, I didn't feel like I was gimped for not using the melee counter.
You didn't feel like the game was, like, like low-key forcing you to use it? It just felt like a tool. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And like I brought up on the Samus Returns episode for the game club that like I used the pseudo screw attack, which by the way, the tutorial in Dread specifically teaches you to do.
Interesting.
I used the pseudo screw attack a lot in Metroid games, and In Samus Returns, I've just felt like it couldn't kill anything. Like it's normally not very powerful, but usually can at least kill like little guys that you're not supposed to care about. And it just couldn't in Samus Returns. And in Dread, it could. So Dread, I feel like the balance for enemy health is way better. And also the melee counter even feels better inherently, because instead of it like slows down time and you're supposed to shoot at an enemy like 7 times in that slowed down time, now it's just you do one big blast that's probably going to kill them.
Oh, cool. Yeah. How did you guys feel about like performance levels as far as like resolution, frame rate? Did it hold up pretty well?
It looks sharp. I mean, I feel like when I first started it up and I was really paying attention to the OLED screen, I was noticing how sharp it looked. And I at least when it in the opening, I was like, okay, this looks like it could be native 720p. I truly wasn't paying enough attention later on, but like right at the beginning, I really thought like, okay, this looks native 720p. But again, I wasn't thinking about it through the whole playthrough.
Sure.
But just in general, the game looks great. The art style is really well done. They do a good job of just having a lot of depth in the backgrounds, and you know, some of the, even though the more like fire magma areas I didn't get to explore much, like the few times I sort of briefly encountered those rooms, like it looked really nice, and there was some very nice like bloom for like the fire. Matt, what about you? What do you think?
I am not a good person to ask about resolution because I tend to not be able to identify it very well, but I am very sensitive to frame rate, and I did not notice it drop a single frame.
Cool.
I feel like the performance was rock solid. And yeah, it's like you said, the environments are gorgeous. I mean, in such a way, it's supposed to look like really bleak and sort of not that appealing. But the work done by the game's artists is all phenomenal, I think. And the backgrounds feel a lot more lively than I'm used to in Metroid. Like there was one point where I walk into a room and like there's this huge shadow being cast on the wall behind me. And then I look over to the side of the screen and like in the background, like there's these two little creatures fighting, and that's what's casting the shadow. And it was like a unique animation for that one spot. And sure. it was really cool.
Speaking of frame rate, there is one moment which I had noticed this during Treehouse Live, but I got to see it again in the demo. It's after the boss fight, the boss who can cloak itself and has like the tail. When you defeat that boss, and this is during a cutscene, but like Samus does that really cool like somersault and then like lands right in front of the camera. I'm not sure if you remember this exactly, but there's as like Samus is like flipping in the air, there's like a whole bunch of there's like a cavern collapsing in the back and like stones like collapsing. And at least in Treehouse Live, I was like, okay, that looks like there's slowdown there while Samus is like jumping into the camera. But then at the same time, it also might just be an artistic choice to be like, ooh, let's slow down the camera first, or like let's slow down everything for a second as Samus lands. So I don't know. I think it might just be an artistic choice, but I also was like, or is the frame rate chugging here? I wasn't sure. I sort of felt there was a little less slowdown, or at least they didn't slow it down as much in the newer version of the game. So maybe it was slowdown, but I still think it might just be an artistic choice.
Yeah, I would guess artistic choice, because you don't really see slowdown that much nowadays as you do frame skipping. Where like it'll just use fewer frames in the same amount of gameplay.
Yeah, so you're talking about the game looking like it's in slow motion as opposed to like choppy or anything like that, just to clarify.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I did notice that I think the cutscene in that you're talking about, I think that was running at 30. So I think
was the game 60?
30. It looked, I'm pretty sure it's 60.
Okay. I mean, I'm just, it's hard when you're watching like streams and YouTube. Like I don't even notice the frame rate until I'm actually playing it.
Well, we have video if you want to. I mean, I think probably both of us took video. Did you record in 60 frames?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. I mean, we could let's analyze the footage. You, the readers as well, the listeners. And
it's all analyzed together.
Yeah.
But great.
Yeah.
Let's see. Is there anything else we want to talk about for Metroid Dread?
I can't think of anything else.
Okay.
Unless you want to talk about the reference to the manga.
I think we should.
Tell me about the reference to the manga. Of course, we'll have to explain the manga since it didn't come out here.
Well, so I'll explain the reference, and then let's John, how about you connect it to the manga?
Oh, you're really going to have to test my memory. Okay.
So this is going to be a really easy one. So
okay.
The way that you get the Omega Beam, which is what you use to kill the Emmys, you get it in a room where there's like this thing that kind of looks like a brain, and it's like there are cannons protecting it that are shooting like these spinning laser rings, and you defeat that brain, and then you get the Omega Beam.
Well, is that even a reference to the manga, or is that just a reference to Metroid?
Well, I mean, it's in a Chozo area, is the thing.
Oh, sure. So, okay, I get
like
what you're
saying. In a Chozo temple kind of area.
Okay. The implication, of course, being that the Chozo obviously made these mother brain like things, but aimed cannons at them just in case. Because last time, this thing caused problems.
Mother brain was created by the Chozo, according to the manga. And I feel like the only reason that a mother brain type thing, because it's clearly a reference to mother brain, and I feel like the only reason that would be in an area that belongs to the Chozo would be as a reference to the manga.
Sure. Does that not come up in Fusion?
It does not.
Okay. I was thinking it did, but maybe it.
I don't think the Chozo are even mentioned in Fusion.
Well, they bring them up when they talk about, because Fusion does reference the Chozo creating the Metroid in one of Samus's scenes. I believe it has been like 2 days since I finished it, so the information is gone from my brain. But I believe Fusion mentions the Chozo creating the Metroid. And I was thinking that it mentioned Mother Brain in there too, but it may not have.
I don't think it does.
Okay. Yeah, and Matt, you did say that Adam, your computer is fully voiced.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Great.
He has like the monotone computer voice.
He's the computer voice we've been hearing a little bit in the trailers so far, I take it. Yeah.
Yes. And he talks about as much as he did in Fusion. And it is fully voice acted.
I like that. I do wonder, because like late in Fusion, you did get Samus talking back to him. I do wonder if at any point Samus will wind up talking. I assume we don't hear the Chozo that we've seen from what you guys have seen. We haven't heard them talk.
No, the opening scene that we've seen in the trailers, what you've seen in the trailers is pretty much the entire scene. And he did not appear again for the length of the demo.
Okay. Did you meet the other Chozo?
No. Okay. I don't know if you did, Jared. You got further than me.
I don't think I got much further than you. I did not. No.
Okay.
And I don't believe, based on what I'm aware, I don't believe they were in the demo.
Okay.
You know, I just thought of one other thing, which we didn't really speak of much. The music.
Oh, sure.
You know, from what I've heard, especially for like the Emmy moments, I think it does a really great job of intensifying the horror element. I think in those moments, it does a really good job of like, you know, getting your blood pumping and sort of scaring you. It's not exactly like, you know, it's not like the Halloween theme from the Halloween movies, but it does a good job of freaking you out. And like it's not like just like an alarm going off, even though I feel like there is a little bit of a like an almost alarm sound element. But in the more quiet moments when you're not worrying about Emmys, I feel like at least from the sections I played, not that there is music and it does it does do a good job of creating like a certain mood, a feeling of like isolation and things. But as far as like iconic songs, like I don't think there was much of the iconic Metroid music in at least the demo areas. And no
Magmoor Caverns.
No. But as far as like, I again, Metroid Prime, like every single song on that soundtrack is so damn good. And as far as songs like that, that I or even just Super Metroid or any of those games, I'm sort of worried about as far as like iconic themes that are going to be in the different areas. And again, we only got to play such a very short segment, but I maybe am a little worried about that. Like I don't think we even know who the composer is yet. Maybe it's the same person as Samus Returns. Maybe it's the Mercury Steam sound team. Like, do you think, I almost feel like Nintendo wouldn't allow that. I feel like they would use their own composers, but
even Samus Returns was largely existing song, either remixes of songs that were in Metroid 2 or songs from elsewhere in the Metroid universe. It didn't have a whole lot of like brand new music.
Sure. But I mean, that makes sense for like a remake.
You do have me curious now about who did the music for Samus Returns, though. Might have to look that up real quick here.
Yeah, I was trying to Google it, and I don't think anyone knows, which that almost makes you wonder. It's like, is that a negative thing that Nintendo doesn't want to like flaunt who the composer is?
Yeah, I mean, they've been flaunting everything else about this game, so it is almost surprising.
To be fair, it's not like Nintendo's, I mean, we know it's Mercury Steam, but it's not like they're that often being like, hey, Mercury Steam. Like, I feel like they owe, you know, they're often a little, can be a little quiet about that.
So the music director for Samus Returns was Kenji Yamamoto, who has done plenty of Metroid stuff.
I believe he also worked on Prime.
Yeah. And then they also have somebody credited for music and arrangement, who is Daisuke Matsuoka. I'm saying this wrong.
Daisuke Matsuoka.
There you go.
Who I believed, or at least just from looking at their credits, I believe they worked on Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. And
yeah, it looks like all the Donkey Kong Country Returns games. Tomodachi Life.
Which, I mean, those have good soundtracks. So
yeah, and I will like Metroid Fusion. I'm just trying to go, because it's like you're trying to think of like Metroid soundtracks, and you have to go back so far before you find one that wouldn't have been pulling from existing music.
Other M. I honestly, I don't remember the music in Other M that well, but
imagine a generic film score, and that's Other M's music.
It had some moments that were solid, but overall, yeah, it was forgettable.
Even the Ridley theme in Other M kind of sucks.
And like Fusion really bounced between, like, it has some memorable songs, but it also has lots of very atmospheric stuff. As atmospheric as you can get on the Game Boy speakers, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I simultaneously get that concern, because Metroid has some great music, while also like, I would like for them to not use the old stuff, but still make new good stuff.
Well, of course.
Yeah. The fact that neither of you, like, when I ask you guys, when you go into a hot room, does it play the hot room theme song from Metroid? that you guys said no. Like, that's exciting.
It's a step up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, yeah, you do want that to be replaced by something. If they're not going to do that, then like, do something.
Unfortunately, I can't really comment much on the music, because since I was like recording filming with my phone the whole time, like, they had headphones for us to like plug in and use, but I wanted sound to be on my phone or on my recording, so like I didn't use the headphones, so I didn't really personally hear the music very well. So
go back and watch your footage to hear the sound.
I might have to, yeah. I made sure that when I entered a hot room, it wasn't theme of hot place.
I appreciate that. Yeah, our heads were in the same place there.
It was very important to me.
You like just burst into the event before you even got to the booth, and you're just like, is the hot place theme of hot place? And like, what are you talking about?
This hot place theme of hot place.
Okay, well, I think we've exhausted Metroid Dread topics for we've talked almost as long about it as you guys played it. So I suspect we are running out of things to talk about. Mm-hmm. We are coming up on the hour mark, but I did figure I'd give you guys a second here. What were your general impressions of the Nintendo Direct last week?
The Smashterpieces curse continues.
Yeah, explain the Smashterpieces curse to our audience, Matt.
Okay, so this is like, I legitimately kind of believe in the supernatural a little bit now. So Smashterpieces is it's the podcast that I do with my friend Joe DeVader, where we are playing one game for every fighter in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. We are playing in chronological order. So we started with the NES, moved on to the Super Nintendo and all that. The first time that Nintendo added NES games to the Nintendo Switch Online, we had played every game that they added already. So it was not helpful to Smashterpieces. We still had to play Kirby's Adventure and Mario 2 USA, but they weren't on the Nintendo Switch Online at launch. So we went on to play those games eventually. And then like within a week, they were added to Nintendo Switch Online. a couple months pass. We finish the Super Nintendo library. We move on to the N64. And then the Super Nintendo games get added. But okay, you may say to yourself, a year passes and they add a new system. So 1 year later, we're still in the N64 library and they don't add any N64 games. But then in April, we finish Pokemon Stadium 2, which we may or may not have needed to use an emulator for. And specifically, one specific emulator we needed to use. And wouldn't you know it, as soon as we finish Pokemon Stadium 2, that emulator gets its first major update in 10 years. So now we finish the Nintendo 64 library, and I'm telling everyone I know, Nintendo 64 games on NSO. Guarantee it, 100%, because the witch's curse has been placed upon me, and God himself has told me that Nintendo 64 games will be on Switch Online. And lo and behold, just as the scriptures foretold.
So how far out are you from finishing GameCube, just so I know for future planning?
I mean, we literally just finished Pikmin, so it's going to be a little while.
Okay. I eagerly await it.
And there were rumors of Game Boy games getting added. And
there's still rumors.
Yeah, Joe's theory was that since we hadn't started our first Game Boy Advance game yet, it doesn't count as us having finished the Game Boy. So
you have to finish the entire Game Boy lineage, not just the original Game Boy. I see.
Well, no. So once we start Game Boy Advance games, then the original Game Boy will be added.
Oh, gotcha.
I see.
Okay. What about Game Boy Color?
Game Boy Color?
That's a picky
thing.
Curse.
it must be. And for what it's worth, we have also finished Sega Genesis games.
Oh, there you go. So,
what
Sonic game did you play?
Sonic 2.
Okay.
Which is on the service.
Yeah, yes.
And oh, also, wow. Yeah. They picked that one.
And not only that, but the N64 games too. Like, Dr. Mario 64 is such an obscure game.
Yeah.
That like, Joe literally didn't believe me when I told him it existed at first. And it was not easy for us to play multiplayer on that game because the only way we were able to do it was by finding like the Japanese GameCube collection that had Dr. Mario 64 on it. That was the only way we could play it together. And then we're all done. And now Dr. Mario 64 is on Nintendo Switch Online with multiplayer.
Nice.
This curse is real.
That is impressive. Now you need to start trying to manipulate it for your own for your own gain.
Don't worry, F-Zero isn't that far out.
All right.
Speaking of the 64 and the Genesis, I know a lot of people were like, "Oh, I'm not excited about it." Like, "Oh, all those Genesis games are most of them are already available on Switch." I don't think there's no other way to play Musha on Switch. That's a nice addition. I think that might be the only game you couldn't already play on Switch. But I'm excited. I like Genesis. Did they confirm M2 is doing the emulation for that? Or I thought I saw someone say that.
So we've been asking, we actually asked Nintendo about does the Genesis support the online multiplayer like the other ones do? Does it have the rewind function like the other ones do? And they just told us that more information on that stuff would be coming soon. So I don't think we know much about the emulation for those at this point. Hopefully if it's M2, that'd be great. They did. I mean, M2 isn't doing, like, they stopped the Sega Ages games, right?
Yeah, that ended a year ago.
That would be the perfect amount of time for M2 to make a bunch of NSO games, right? That's how that works. Yeah.
I mean, M2 did all the Genesis virtual console games on Wii.
Oh, did they? Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That'd be great. I mean, that's the other thing to take note of with the whole, like, all these games are already playable on Switch thing is a lot of them are playable, but via the Genesis collection, which has some issues, some significant, like, input latency issues. So it's not the ideal way to play a lot of these games.
No. Yeah.
So
that's why it is nice. Yeah.
Yeah. If this is well done, then this, yeah, would be the definitive way to play a lot of these games, especially for a game like Sonic. Input latency is not a good thing.
No, I mean, to be fair, then Sega Ages Sonic 1 and Sonic 2 exist, so those don't have the latency problems. Those are already good versions of them.
We're also getting brand new ports of those games too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next year. Yeah.
But, you know, it could be the definitive way to play Shining Force on Switch. Mm-hmm. Which, for my money, is the best game in that lineup. And if you haven't played Shining Force, you should play Shining Force. It's great.
Is it one or two? Or
it is the first one.
Okay.
They were very weird about what, like, in games that had multiple entries. Like, for Sonic, they went with two. For Streets of Rage, they went with two. Golden Axe is one, and Shining Force is one.
Those are the ones they've been choosing mostly. Yeah, most recently.
And I get it for Golden Axe. I do think the first Golden Axe is the best one. Streets of Rage 1 is fine. Like, what's wrong with Streets of Rage 1?
Streets of Rage 2 is also, like, they're both Streets
good.
Of Rage 1 and 2 are great, but I feel like Streets of Rage 2 has a little more, is more of a cult favorite. I don't know. I think the music's a little better in Streets of Rage 2. I mean,
that's
Yuzo Koshiro does the music in both, and, like, it's great in both, but I think some of the most iconic songs from the series are in two.
Now, Jared, I'm sure you would appreciate this. One of the things I would love to see them do with the Genesis Online stuff is expand that into, like, the 32X and Sega CD stuff for the Genesis.
I agree, because why have we never gotten
it's
that?
It's nowhere. Yeah, a lot of those games are just like,
yeah,
like, unless you have one of those or are going to emulate it, they've never really been re-released for a lot of them.
I forget if it was there was that service GameTap it was like almost like a
download the games.
Yes, yeah, and that it was on PC like 10 years ago, and I think that actually did have 32X games, but, like, that's
really
one of the few times it had 32X and I think Saturn games.
Wow.
But again, one, there weren't a lot of games, but it's like the only time I think Sega has, like, officially re-released those games in any form or, like, gave people a way to play them.
Yeah, because there's still, I mean, even stuff that's on other, like, so, you know, Virtual Racing is on Switch, but I'd still say that the 32X is arguably kind of the definitive version of that game.
Yeah, the 32X port has more tracks.
Right, it has so much more stuff in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would love to see them use this as an excuse to revisit that stuff. I don't think they will, but, you know, here's hoping.
There's a lot of Sega CD games people would like to play. I mean, just I feel like they would make their money back just on selling Snatcher for a reasonable price.
Yeah. I mean, the FMV games are having a resurgence in popularity, largely for being bad. But, you know, there's room there.
That's true. A bunch of those have already been re-released even without a Sega CD emulator.
Even if Sega, sell me a 32X collection. I will buy it.
Same.
I just want, like, Virtua Fighter, Virtua Racing, and Shadow Squadron.
I know Knuckles Chaotix sucks, but I want to play it.
Sure, yeah, let me... How do you have a Sonic game that you refuse to let people play?
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
Who knows? Maybe it'll be on the collection next year.
Maybe. Well, all right. Shall we call that an episode, fellas?
I don't know. What do you guys think about Chris Pratt?
Oh, yeah.
I think that sums it up.
I think he could be good. We don't we don't know what they're doing, so
the rest of the cast I'm kind of okay with.
So, I almost think they should not have announced the cast first. They should have had a trailer with the voice actors and like given people a chance to hear it so they could be like, "Oh yeah, this actually looks good."
Yeah, don't tell me it's Chris Pratt. Just show me Mario and let me go. Is that Chris Pratt?
Just in case anyone happens to be listening to this and doesn't know, Chris Pratt is going to be playing Mario in the Hollywood Super Mario Brothers movie.
But also, Charlie Day is playing Luigi. And I would have never thought of that, but once I heard it, I was like, yeah, okay.
Setting aside my feelings of, man, it's shitty that voice actors are getting pushed out of their own industry in favor of big name celebrities. Setting that aside, I do agree Charlie Day's a pretty good choice. Wasn't a big fan of most of the other ones.
To give Nintendo some credit, which I thought was really smart, to be upfront and be like, hey, you know, they didn't like say it like this, but Charles Martinet isn't voicing Mario, but like he is in the movie. Mario's voice will be in the film.
Yeah. And I'm not against Charles Martinet not playing Mario. That's not what upsets me, because like Charles Martinet has never played Mario in the way he would need to for this movie.
No.
So like I get it.
And yeah, if you heard Charles Martinet's Mario voice for an hour and a half, you might start stabbing people.
Yeah. And it's like the reason that it upsets me is that I definitely feel like a large factor for a lot of these choices was that they are recognizable celebrities that even though they are not traditionally voice actors.
But Chris Pratt has done a bunch of voice acting. I mean, at least as the lead actor, like he's done other animated films.
Yeah, but I mean, those are all the same exact story. So that's the thing.
Yeah, like, no, I do. Yeah, I sympathize with that thing of voice actors being pushed out of their industry by movie stars from live action stuff.
That's just the way that it is, though. I can really only spend so much time being mad about that.
Oh, sure. But I mean, it's watch any movie version of any musical as well, and you'll find a lot of actors who can't sing instead of people who are in musicals. Emma Watson was great as Belle, but she not really a singer.
I do kind of feel like Chris Pratt's not the best choice for Mario, because I'm not convinced that he has a Mario in him.
He does. He did say there was an interview where he says that it is not his regular voice. So I am very interested to hear what the Chris Pratt Mario voice is.
Yeah, but there are some choices that are good. Like I said, Charlie Day as Luigi is really good. I haven't seen Anya Taylor-Joy in anything, but I've heard people say that like she's a really good choice for Peach.
I mean, she's a really great actress, so I think that's that helps.
Key as Toad.
That works. That one works.
I have no idea what is going to happen, but I would like to see it happen, please.
Yeah. No, that one's perfect.
Yeah. No complaints there.
I know a lot of people are really excited about Jack Black as Bowser, but I don't know about that one. I'm not convinced.
Jack Black is, Jack Black, definitely past his prime, but I do enjoy as he gets old. Like he's even made the comment as he gets older where he's just said, I just want to do a bunch of movies that my kids can actually watch while they're kids. Mm-hmm. And I do appreciate that mindset as he continues to make not very good family movies.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know, it's sweet at least.
He's made a lot of great movies. I mean, School of Rock is amazing. I know that was a while ago, but you know.
I feel like this is going to be like an origin story movie, because otherwise I don't know why Foreman Spike is in it. And it feels very much like the movie's going to start in Donkey Kong, the arcade game, and then it is going to move on to Mario.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. The bar is so incredibly low.
Especially from the studio that made Minions.
Yeah, from the studio that made Minions and the franchise that brought us the live-action Super Mario Brothers movie, like, there have been very few bars as close to the ground as this. So, you know, hopefully it'll be fine. I'm going to see it. Like, you know.
I'm excited.
If it opens up the way to them, like, I kind of want to see them do more of this. So give me my animated Star Fox movie and my weird, terrible Zelda movie. And
give us Nick Fury at the end to set up the Smash Brothers movie.
Yes. Yeah. Set up that extended universe.
And then there will be a deal with Paramount to bring in the Sonic movies for the Smash Brothers stuff.
You've already got a great Pikachu movie.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Detective Pikachu.
It's weirdly good.
It was.
It's okay. All right.
It was good. It was fine.
It was better than I thought it was going to be going into it.
I believe what I said walking out of that movie was the best video game movie I've ever seen, and it's not a high bar.
Oh, that's exactly. Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat came out after.
No. I'm talking original? About 1995 Mortal Kombat.
Oh, I've never seen it, so I don't know if it's genuinely good
really?
Or just meme good.
Oh, I mean, you should watch it, but I think, I don't know. Do you saw the new one?
No, I've never really been a Mortal Kombat fan.
Fair.
You guys are just ignoring the obvious real answer, which is, of course, Wing Commander, starring Freddie Prinze Jr.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, massive Rampage with The Rock.
You know, that is the exact kind of...
It was like, genuinely kind of okay.
Like, pretty much, if you show me a trailer for a movie and it's like, things are going to blow up and The Rock will be there, I'm like, all right. Like, okay. I have a weird, like, I've seen way too many Dwayne The Rock Johnson movies, and I regret literally none of them. Maybe Doom, but, like, even that was fun.
In Rampage, do they have any video game references? I never saw it.
They do, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
There's one point where it's just, like, a sweeping shot of, like, the city being destroyed by the monsters, and it's, like, straight out of the video game animations.
That bring up the 64 games. I hope we get the Rampage games on virtual, or it's Ooh. Not called virtual consoles, on Nintendo Switch Online. That would be cool.
That'd be those are kind of abandoned. Yeah. Let's end it there with positive thoughts about Rampage.
I'm fine with that.
All right.
Works with me.
Thank you, everyone, very much for listening. If you have any thoughts on your favorite video game movies, be they Dwayne The Rock Johnson movies or otherwise, you can send those to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and perhaps we'll read them on the show. You can follow us at @connectivitynwr on Twitter. And if you're listening to this podcast on a service where you can rate things, hey, you should rate it. Thanks, Matt and Jared, for joining me for this episode and for sharing your illustrious takes on Metroid Dread.
Thanks for keeping up my streak of being on an episode of Connectivity halfway between Metroid Game Club episodes.
It was really fun to join you guys. So, yes, thank you.
And we will see you all next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details. Obviously, I know, like, the kickstand is kind of the main selling point of this thing, But how was the screen?
I would
screen?
Think the OLED screen would be.
Thanks for the joke there, Matt. That was my joke. That's what I was saying.
Okay. You just say it again, and Alex can edit
and,
that out.
And you can laugh.
Yeah, I'll laugh this time.
Nope, we're leaving that in. We're leaving in that Matt doesn't get my jokes.